Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV aristocrat, pulling rabbits from his hat. Oh, well, I didn't know it worked like that. Sounds great until you do the math. And now people waking up, poking heads out of their stuff. What an expensive turtle shell. It's probably just as well, because I don't want to be the machine powered by the American Dream.
And welcome to the Legacy Forum. This is Robin and Harry Chavry. We meet here every Monday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We come here to give you our best. We would like to thank last week's special guest, Emily Page. She provided a lot of humor, a lot of insight. Hopefully, she'll be back with us providing more fun and more stories next year. You can call in to the show by dialing 347-677-0699. That's 347-677-0699. Or visit us at blogtalkradio.com, the Dynamic Dojo. blogtalkradio.com/the Dynamic Dojo. Or you can email us at thelegacyforum@yahoo.com. Before I forget, if you recognize that beautiful song before we got going tonight, that was one of our previous guests, Amy Hendrickson, and she, let me make sure I say that more plainly because I know you want to go to YouTube and check out some of her music. Amy Hendrickson, she was a great guest a couple of weeks ago, has a new CD coming out soon, and we'll keep you posted on that. So if you've been listening, having fun with us, each week, you know, we provide tidbits of information because you never know what piece of information will change your life. So Harry's here just pulling at the rope, ready to go. He's excited. So here are this week's tidbits, following just a little fun, a little one of Harry's favorite songs. You may remember Space Captain by Leon Russell and Joe Cocker. Give a little listen.
Matthew Morris' song. Remember the name? Matthew Morris called Space Captain.
It's just Learning to Live Together, brought to you by Joe Cocker and one of my all-time favorites, Leon Russell. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, we're honored to be here tonight. And tidbit number one, as we always start out with our tidbits, tidbit number one A Harvard study found that drinking 2 cups of cocoa a day for 30 days significantly improved memory in older adults. Drinking cocoa boosted the blood flow to the brain, and I need that. So if you want to make it even better, add cinnamon. It helps moderate blood pressure. Number 2, add chili pepper. It calms arthritis, may ease headaches, and helps with insulin control and those with diabetes. And number 3, add peppermint because why? It aids digestion. That's tidbit number 1. So let's move on. Right after 1, tidbit number 2, check your credit health. You're entitled to a free annual credit report from each of the 3 major credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. CAnnualCredit.com. I'll repeat, CAnnualCredit.com. Check it out and get those reports. You never know what's on your credit report. Tidbit number 3, Christmas is fast upon us, and Christmas became a national holiday in America on June 26, 1870. Tidbit number 4, the custom of celebrating the birth of Christ on December 25th occurred in the 4th century. This was a clever move on the part of church fathers who wished to have forgotten that December 25th festivities were a rival of the pagan religion. The celebration of Christmas became a permanent fixture in the Western world in the year 337 under the rule of Roman Emperor Constantine. Now, tidbit number 5, it is a myth that the spelling Xmas is disrespectful. It is not. It is not true that the word Xmas is an abbreviated form of Christmas. X is a substitute for the Greek chai, which early church representation of Christ. There is no intention of disrespect by taking Christ out of Christmas. So for those out there, Xmas is A-OK. There's nothing wrong with it. The Greeks did it a long time ago. So, Robin, that is those are our tidbits for the evening, and it's on to you because now it's your turn to shine.
Well, thank you. I do like to shine, and I shine so much better when my microphone's on. It takes me a second sometimes. Well, actually, Harry, I think with a little bit more consideration, I'm ready to let you shine as you introduce tonight's guest. I'm super excited about tonight's guest, and Harry, I think you are certainly better qualified to introduce our guest for this evening.
I appreciate that, Robin. This is truly an honor. Our guest tonight is a licensed marriage and family therapist, licensed in alcohol and drug counseling, a certified mediator, and a clinical member of the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy, with more than 25 years' experience in private practice. He currently serves as the secretary of the Oklahoma Association for Marriage and Family Therapy Board. He also holds the distinction of being both an internal family systems practitioner and a certified sexual addiction therapist. As a CSAT candidate, Dr. Croninger is training under Dr. Patrick Carnes, the pioneer in sexual addiction research and treatment. Now, Dr. Croninger's goal is to combine the best understanding of human behavior with a strong biblical faith. He believes that when properly understood and applied, the principles of modern behavioral science and those of Christian faith can be integrated to provide, you know, a holistic health approach to healing of life hurts. Dr. Croninger holds a Doctor of Ministry degree from Drew University, a Master of Divinity degree from Asbury Theological Seminary, and a Bachelor's degree in Radio TV Journalism from the University of Tulsa. He's completed 20 hours of postdoctoral marriage and family studies at the University of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State University, and completed clinical training at Presbyterian Hospital in Oklahoma City. But that's all the technical stuff, but let me tell you something about David. David is one of the few men that I know that can speak in the pulpit. He's a retired minister and compete in the martial arts ring. He is truly one of my favorite people in the world. Dr. Croninger, how in the world are you this evening?
Harry, I am great, and it's good to get connected with you again.
You hear how our audience just loves Dr. Croninger, just loves him. We got to hold them back. So, David, what in the world? I haven't seen you in such a long time. Tell me a little bit about your activities. And we were so honored to have you tonight because this is Christmas time. Tell me about what you've been doing, and tell me what the special holiday season means to you.
Well, probably the most important thing I've been doing recently is visiting my daughters, 36 and 33, in Boulder, Colorado, and Kansas City, Missouri, and even more importantly, my four grandkids. Each of my kids has two kids. In terms of Christmas, I think that can be succinctly stated is that Christmas is a time to celebrate the birth and life of Jesus Christ, the Son of God who has come so long ago yet comes with such a relevant message that transforms lives, heals hurts, and gives hope, which is so important. So many today, even me included, need a word and truth that will set us free from the kinds of things that wrap us up and cause us such pain.
Well, you didn't mention buying a gift. I thought this was time to go shopping.
Well, somehow that has become the mainstay of this season. Yet buying gifts in many ways has nothing to do with Christmas. The word gift, I think, is central to Christmas because Jesus is the gift, the free gift of life and health and wholeness and hope from the heart and the hand of God. He is our gift. Jesus is our gift, freely given and freely received. But it has nothing to do with buying things at Walmart or buying online or the giving of trees that are or giving of presents that are put under a tree. That is something that has come as kind of an addition that has very little to do, in my opinion, about what Christmas is all about.
So let me ask you this then: if someone doesn't give me a gift for Christmas, should I be insulted? I thought the whole idea was to measure someone's love by the size and the amount of a gift that was given. Is that not true?
No, that is not true. In fact, one of the things that I've encouraged those closest to me for the last several years to do is that instead of giving me a gift, because actually my wife and I have, we're very clear, we have everything we need. In fact, we have more than we need. We encourage people to give. If they need to give us something, that we encourage them to give a gift in our name to places like Compassion International, which is a relief organization that placed all across the world that provides homes and meals and schooling for children who have no parents or no resources. So those gifts to places like Compassion is not the only one, World Vision. There's just numerous places, credible organizations that are making the difference in the lives of people. I mean, my wife and I have been to South Africa probably half a dozen times. She has been to South America several times. Usually we go on a two-week mission to usually build a church or do HIV, AIDS respite work where we're in the homes of families who have lost family members to AIDS. That's what Christmas is about, is giving back, especially to people who have so little, giving back, saying, thank you, Jesus, for coming and bringing me new life through redemption, the forgiveness of my sins, so I can give back to other people that same message. I can't give it like Jesus gave, but I can give a portion. Give part of my time and money and resources and presence, presence, not presents, my presence, that God may use it to bring hope and healing and encouragement, and also as we bring money and other kinds of resources to make life better, either through clean drinking water or being with people who've lost loved ones to AIDS, or building churches or remodeling churches, so people will have a place to go not only for worship, but in South Africa, for instance, they have their churches serve as social service agencies, so they have places during the week to go.
So are the people in Africa really poor, David? I mean, is that the deal? Is they're really poor and need medical care and stuff like that?
Oh, they're not bored. They're just poor. I mean,
they're poor.
They're extremely poor. Yeah, for instance, one of the places we went in South Africa, in Cape Town, the male population had about a 70% unemployment rate. The women basically would spend the day trying to make a home and go get clean drinking water and cook food, which was very scarce. But the poverty is just absolutely unbelievable. People live on just, you know, many people live on $1 a day or $2 a day, which is just frankly unbelievable.
Well, David, I've been born a capitalist. Why don't people just move to where the jobs are?
Ha! Well, it's just not that easy. If you were born, for instance, in the town of Cape Town, South Africa, which is also called, it's interesting, Cape Town is one of the most sought-after vacation spots in that part of the world, especially in Asia. Some say it is got a view of heaven, but you got one foot in heaven and one foot in hell because, again, many in that town, which is representative of many towns across the world, they have nothing. Barbed wire is around anything of value because anything and everything is stolen that is not nailed down and barbed wired. People are desperately poor. They need you and me to give of our resources and to be present. No, not everyone can go there, but a few of us can, to help do the little, and it's so little, but just to do a little in helping their life be not so miserable, anchored in poverty. No, some people, if you're born in South Africa, you don't have anything and you don't have much choice about going anywhere to get a job. You have to live in the arena that you were given.
So for those people that would say that poverty there is a curse from God to punish those people, you wouldn't accept that?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. I've had the privilege of being with many, for instance. I mean, I've spent most of my time overseas in South Africa, having been there 5 times. Some of the most precious human beings in the world, but they just, I mean, literally don't have a pot to pee in. In that, Cape Town is in southwestern South Africa. I've been to southeastern South Africa, to Port Elizabeth, in a town called in Port Elizabeth, where there's a road down the middle of the town, and on one side of the road is a cemetery, and there are more people who died of AIDS than there are on the other side of the road that are alive. Children absolutely are losing parents and grandparents, have lost parents and grandparents to just AIDS as one of the pandemics, one of the great scourges of our day. They didn't have any choice about that. Many of the people who died of AIDS didn't have a choice about that. Their pandemic has to do with poor sanitation and other kinds of customs about sexuality that have to do with the way they've lived their life for hundreds of years. No, that is not a curse at all, no.
Well, David, you and I go way back, and you're a problem. And I don't want to speak of all the ministers I've ever known or all the men of God that I've known, but you're the only one that I can say that has remained constant throughout the years. You have never wavered. You've never – your belief system that since the day I've met you, although you've changed a little bit and grown, I get all that, but your passion for the Word of Christ, your passion to represent to the best of your ability the teachings of Christ has never wavered. I've always admired you for that. And it's cost you dearly in some times. In some church settings, it's cost you because you stuck to the words of Christ as opposed to, you know, getting lost in the dogma of church religion. And you're one of the few that I really admire. And you once told me one time that I do better sometimes when I don't attend church because I will challenge an elder or a minister. And you're one of the few that when I would challenge, you would take my word seriously and you would tell me when I was wrong or you thought I was wrong. And then if I was wrong, you would prove me wrong. And I really admired that. So,
see, well, Harry, many times you were right. there are so few people who shout the church. In my opinion, the church today is in a dark age, like the 1500s. I think we've lost our way. We're losing members and losing money, at least the mainline churches are, and becoming desperate. And kind of like rearranging deck furniture on the Titanic, the worse the crisis becomes, the crazier the behavior becomes by leaders in the church. And that behavior must be called into account. It's not, as often we're told as ministers, that it's about money and it's about attendance numbers. And obviously you can't operate any organization without looking at numbers and money, but it is so far removed from what it's really about. It's about the love of Christ. It's about being present with people who have needs. It's about providing food for the hungry. It's about doing Bible studies and discipleship authentically, not just trying to make the church bigger, but to try to make people bigger, you know, in the sense of their integrity and their character and how they serve. And I've appreciated you over the years as my first karate sensei, and having spent so many hours together, of your integrity and your strength and your clarity about the purpose of life and your calling a spade a spade when it needs to be called. I've run into very few people who have had the courage to do that.
Well, I appreciate that. The reason we really wanted you on tonight is because we are so close to Christmas that it is truly a special time in our lives, and I think oftentimes that more people need to hear what you have to say, because, like I said, you know, at our age, we've seen a lot, we've been around a lot, been to many churches. You're about the only minister that has ever stuck out of my mind that has the courage of the conviction to stand in the pulpit, to stand wherever you're at, and stand on the words of Christ as love, as compassion, as spreading the gospel through our works, as opposed to condemning people for their sins. I mean, I remember one time I asked you, because there was another minister, or a man of the cloth, let's say, I'm not sure what the title was, but was talking in a one-on-one conversation about homosexuality. And to the best of my recollection, Jesus never said that homosexuality was wrong. I'm not asking you to approve it, but I remember the phone call. I called you. I said, David, you have a doctorate in this stuff. Did Jesus ever condemn homosexuality? I'm not talking about the Apostle Paul. I'm just talking about Jesus. And you got with me about a week later, I think it was, and you said, Harry, I don't think he ever mentioned it. So that really impressed me, because you didn't come back and say, well, Harry, you know, this guy says this, or this guy says that, or this passage says this. You didn't tell me what your conviction was. What you answered was the question I asked. And I really have always been interested. Is that
right.
When I ask the question, you answer the question rather than trying to convince me what the Bible's interpretation was. All I asked was about the word of Christ. So, you know,
and see, Jesus was all about loving people. Jesus hated sin because sin hurt his people. Sin is defined, in my opinion, as anything that hurts someone. So that's why Jesus was against sin, but for people. So we all have missed the mark. We have all sinned, and we all need the love of God and his acceptance. We also need to be held accountable for our behavior. So when our behavior begins to hurt and damage ourselves or others, it must be called into account. But you and I both know that when we get called into account, we really appreciate it if someone can do it in a loving way. So that's the way I understand Jesus.
And that's who we celebrate
this season.
I think that this season, if in fact, I mean, our national economy is greater than it's been in a quarter of a century or thereabouts. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but our Dow is higher, the highest it's been in history. There is more liquid capital in corporations than ever before in history. And
right.
Yet we have 1 in 4 of our kids live in poverty. We have a national health system that's broken, that's taken a greater percentage of GDP than it ever has. We have a president who's trying to do something about it, but we fight it. And yet we have more capital to solve problems than ever before. Can't do it. I promise you one thing, David. If Jesus had that much capital, I think everybody would have health care.
Probably would be handled better.
Probably would be handled better. So when you have a middle class or even a poor family struggling, and the parents cannot afford to buy the children the latest clothes, the latest toy, the latest Xbox game, provide some words of comfort to those that can't keep up with the Joneses, and give them something that you have given hundreds and thousands of people, because I've heard you do it. How do you let them know it's okay that you don't have the money to buy the latest Xbox game?
Well, it's 36 years as a minister and 25 as a therapist, and some of those overlapped. I am profoundly impacted by the way in which parents influence their kids. And the most important thing, especially in the therapy room, when I'm dealing with the trauma and the aftermath of what has happened to children who have been abused and neglected and have become adults and not functioning very well, I am very clear that the number one job of parents is, number one, just to be present, P-R-E-S-E-N-T, be present and listen and take their kids seriously and spend time with them. Second of all, it's not our job to provide games and stuff, physical stuff for our kids. What I've noticed is if you give a child one present, they say thank you, but if you give them two or more, they say, where's the next one? So there really isn't any magic. There's no healing, hope, and encouragement in giving a number of gifts. What does give hope and encouragement, and I hope parents will take seriously, is being present with your children, working hard, listening, spending time together. Those are the kinds of things children need, and those are the kind of building blocks that kids take with them into adulthood, and that's what they begin, because all children, all of us, learn what we learned, we practice. And if our parents bought a lot of stuff for us, then we'll either buy a lot of stuff for our parents or we'll go just exactly the diametrically the other way and buy nothing. And neither one of those is going to be very helpful. There's some place in the middle. I mean, if you got the money to buy stuff, fine. If you don't, it's not that important, because in the last analysis, and our kids won't always tell us this, but in the last analysis, our kids want us to read stories to them at night, play ball with them during the day, play dolls with them during the day, just hang out with them, and then they get to learn and listen and pattern their lives after the character that they observe in us. So it's important for us to take care of ourselves as parents, to learn and to grow, to admit our mistakes, to ask for forgiveness, to be honest and open, and by that I mean not tell everyone everything you know, but be judicious in what you say. It's okay to even to say no, but whatever comes out of your mouth is open and honest. That's the kind of thing that gives kids a kind of heritage and hope that when they grow up that they don't have to deal with so much brokenness.
So looking forward in our country today, you have dedicated your life to helping make this country a better place to live. You've dedicated your life to helping people. Tell me, do you think, because right now what I see, because my focus is not necessarily on the family unit or an individual like yours is. Mine is more macro level. I study business models, economics, political theory, things of that nature. And the inequality in our nation financially is a tremendous threat to our security from my point of view. But now from your point of view, how do you see us in the next 20 to 25 years proceeding with so much hostility, which I think can be traced back to the inequality, but how do you see, what's the root of this hostility that we see in our country today?
What's the what now?
The root of it.
What's causing
all this hostility? I mean, I'm not saying whether you're a President Obama supporter or whether you're against President Obama. That's not it. But everywhere this man turns, we have people throwing up roadblocks who are of one political persuasion. Here's a guy, or president, has tried to do something since Harry Truman. He's the only president since Harry Truman that has successfully addressed a health care issue that has plagued our country since Harry Truman. And yet as soon as it was passed, rather than trying to make it work, we have tried to either blind ourselves to the flaws or get rid of the whole thing. Now, I have seen so much discourse about a person rather than the issue, and I think it's
deeper. Yeah, what I see, and I'm not involved in politics that much, but one of the things that seems clear to me is that, and I haven't seen this before, is that there seems to be at least a handful of lawmakers whose expressed purpose and intent and life purpose is to say no to whatever Obama is. And that's just wrong. I mean, it doesn't matter who's president. You don't make it your life quest just to make life difficult for whoever's leading. That's number one. Number two, what I see in our country is a large number of people who feel entitled. There's a sense of entitlement like I've never seen before. And with that kind of attitude, I think we're headed, it's like we're headed to the cliff in a fast-moving vehicle. But at some point, we have to recover what it means to be humble, what it means to put others first. I mean, you really got to take care of yourself. There's no doubt about that. But while you do that, you also need to be aware that if you don't make room for your fellow human beings, if you don't let someone else step in front of you and have a turn, if you don't try to help people who have less than you, if you're always moving along that entitlement course and trying to get more and get bigger and get better, it's kind of like the fall of the Roman Empire in a sense that I think Rome felt because it had reached a sense of entitlement, among other things, that it devoured itself. And I'm concerned, and again, I'm not a politician, don't read and study politics and history that much, but one of my concerns is, it's at least what I see, that if we don't somehow recover from this growing sense of entitlement, that the future looks more bleak than it does hopeful.
Well, I think a couple points. I want to acknowledge your brilliance because you and Warren Buffett seem to think alike. Warren Buffett has repeatedly said the greatest threat to our nation is that sense of entitlement, and it doesn't come from the poor. It comes from the rich and the nearly rich in the fact that they think that their wealth allows them to special entitlement, just like that 16-year-old child who killed four people. And he got off basically on 10 years probation, and he was classified. The reason that he did it was because he suffered from being rich, so therefore he couldn't go to prison. And we have that with our country now. Rome suffered nearly the same, or clearly the same thing, in a sense that they believed that the city dwellers had the right to receive the the benefits of the poor in their rural areas of their wages, their soil. So therefore, you had a subclass of people supporting small classes. So, I think we have the same today. But from a moralistic point of view, I was just congratulating you and you and Mark about to make a life. You said the title, but I'll just go that because that's what it is all for. So, with that being said, we got to draw this close to an end. Now, I don't want to leave this on a doom note. I led you here. I don't want to leave you here. Tell me what's great about our country, about our people, and this time of year. Leave us with some kind of hope now.
That's a great question, because there are many great things about our country, because there are many great things about our people. Where there are many that are feeling entitled, there are so many who lead the way in humility and openness and what I call the real strength of being fully human. I love to engage people wherever I go. I just spent some time with my grandson, one of my grandsons, in Kansas City, and I took him to the doctor, and he wasn't feeling well. And one of the things I got to observe was how an 8-year-old can have a 5 or 10 minute ongoing conversation with his pediatrician. And I was just absolutely fascinated how he would ask questions, listen, and ask more questions, and the doctor would talk to him. I think that there are many people in our country who have a deep appreciation for the life they have been given, for the way in which they have been loved, the possessions they have been given, and they share those. They share those with those around them. They share them with their family. They share them with those that are in need. And where, in some ways, it looks like the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket, well, yeah, part of it is probably, but there is also a significant number in our country who really get it, who love God, who love people, who understand that everything that they have is a gift and are able to share that with other people, which again brings us back to your first question of what's the meaning of Christmas. There are many people in our country who really understand and practice the gratitude for having been given a life and hope, have been through hard times and know what it's like to struggle and have felt forgiveness and share that. You know, for people who are usually pretty stingy are people who have never felt the grace and the love of God in many ways. So if we have been forgiven much, we know how to forgive. If we haven't been forgiven much, we don't know how to forgive. So there are many people in our country who have experienced the love of God and share it, and we should never lose sight of that. That's one thing that I really appreciate about many in our country, at least in my experience and kind of the people I get to meet and move around and be with.
David, this has been truly a pleasure. Now, one thing, and for those in the audience and those who download this later, David had no preparation for this. I told him, I said, David, I've known you a long time. I'm just going to shoot stuff at you. Be prepared. So I really love your ability. I wanted people to get that sense of your wealth of knowledge, the love and compassion in your voice. But now do me this favor. How can people get a hold of you? Because I want them to reach out to you when they're in their hour of need, when they need some good counseling, when they need some good advice, when they want to hear some, you know, a voice of love and compassion and understanding. How can someone get a hold of you?
You mean by email? Or by
what? No, I don't care how they get a hold of you. They can come by your house. I don't care. How can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me by email, Dr. D. Cron, that's drdcron at gmail.com. They can call me on my cell phone, 405-226-8509. That'll be fine. Those are two ways.
I'm loving it. I'm telling people, this is a man. And, David, I'll let you go now because I really appreciate you being here, but I'm going to talk about another 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds after you get hung up. I don't want you to get all embarrassed on me, but this has truly been a pleasure. You know, I miss those conversations we had many years ago. You are one of the few people in my life that I can debate with, discuss with, argue with, and we still love each other when it's all said and done. You have your opinions, I have mine. And sometimes we disagree, but I got to tell you something. Very few people in my life have taught me as much about the love of God. I don't think there's anybody in my life who's taught me as much about the love of God as you have, and I appreciate that that is within you. So thank you for being our guest this evening.
My pleasure. It's been a pleasure, Harry. Take care.
Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, if you need some good, solid help that will not just words on a cloth and saying, go, my child, I'll pray for you, but someone who will sit down and talk with you, discuss life with you, and help you, this is a man that will spend time with you to help make your life better. So get a hold of Dr. Croninger anytime you need help. This is one of the truly good people in this world. I'm just impassioned with him. What are you trying to tell me, baby? Robin's trying to tell me something, and I
blind. I can't see all three.
I was just telling you to go ahead and say that right there.
Oh,
okay. Well, I can say that, Roger. Next week's guest is an entrepreneur friend of ours has this new, exciting way of inviting people and helping people out in their hobby. For lack of a better word, next week on Twitter, the longest segment, the weekly, the longest video of this week. Did I say it okay?
Yes, you did. So thank you for our special guest, Dr. Croninger. That was great. Love to hear you guys talking. He said some good things, some good food for thought, and we did appreciate having him and look forward to having Romney. We're going to have a couple more segments coming up, but first, let's hear a little bit of Christ by Amy Hendrickson.
La música es el discurso de angeleses. Es muy importante.
Yeah.
that higher Jesus Christo was his only friend. Maybe it was lies that he was telling me. You never turn down nothing when it is free. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh, oh. He said the moon was made of silver and the sun was spun of gold. That the meek get the earth, but the devil, he prefers the bone. You could change your life now if you wanted to. You gotta change out those lenses that you're looking through. There's a lot of da-da-da. Oh, no, no.
That two of the top five stock picks for 2014, two of them were network marketing companies.
Right, right. That's exciting news. Exactly what you have predicted, that's the trend.
I've been preaching this business model for years. Network marketing is the only business model that fits the current and future.
Weird News.
Talk.
Weird News.
Where does he come up with this stuff? I don't know. I should probably supervise his internet activities a little better. We've enjoyed having you guys with us tonight. It's been a fun show. Just remember, join us each and every Monday on Legacy Forum. Download us at blogtalkradio.com/thedynamicdojo. Remember, every Monday, call 347-677-0699 at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or email us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. So many ways to get in touch with us, and we really do want to hear from you. Tell us how you're leaving a positive legacy. Thank you for joining us this evening. Leave a legacy of your through yourself.
Less born melancholy, it always surrounds me. It's easier to be blue when your eyes always match your mood. But it's not fun to dance to. It's worse to romance too. I've got to change it, rearrange it, and teach my rock how to roll. Here we go. Here we go, yeah.
been praying to the rock gods. I'm gonna bring in the big dogs. See if they can help me to groove. Well, I've been talking to Jimmy, Jabu and Jenny story. I spoke to Lennon too. The outtake girl, do your thing. Let it wheel, let it ring. Free the beast from the cage. Walker's music's divine. And it's a free state of mind. It means everything. Well, it's all I dream about. Well, it took me too long to figure it out. Okay, yes. Got the bass and the horn. Well, the drum is on time. You got a drink and I got a smile. If I can only remember the lies. Well, it's all I dream about. Well, it's only a dream if you don't let it out, out, okay, yes. Here we go, yeah. Well, I've been praying to the rock god. Gonna bring in the big dogs. See if they can help me to groove. Well, I've been talking to Jimmy, jiving with Janice, so I spoke to Lennon too. The outtake girl, do your thing. Let it wheel, let it ring. Free the beast from the cage. All this music's divine. And it's a free state of mind. It means everything.